Rice teasing the ball towards Kane, who's brought it down, gets his shot away and gets his customary goal. Well, the eras come and go, the personnel evolves, but Harry Kane is England's goal-scoring king, and that never gets old.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFallon.
Hello.
In the middle of the international break, the spring international break, so it's a bit more optimistic. We've got a new manager. We won a game. We're playing again very, very soon. We're playing within an hour of when we finish recording tonight. So we're all looking forward to that. We're all going to be sitting in front of our tellies, expecting to be entertained again, just like we were at the end of last week, at the end of Thomas Tuchel's first game in charge. Yeah, we've been waiting for this for a long time. It seems like forever since he was given the job. And finally, Terry, he had his chance to show what he can do as England manager. And what he did was what most of the other really good coaches that we've had over the last few years did, and win 2-0. Easy. We're going all the way now. World Cup. This is it, isn't it?
I think a 2-0 win against Albania is definitely an opportunity to get carried away in the traditional English manner. It's coming home, lads.
And of course, you watched the whole game, didn't you? From start to finish, taking notes all the way throughout.
No, I think that was the other guy. No, that wasn't. I think that's Jan. I think you're getting me confused with Jan. I think Jan, as we know, Jan loves the international break. And he loves England because he's a patriotic fellow.
Well, I know Jan would have been watching it because Miles Lewis-Skelly was making his dramatic debut for England. Player of the match, scored, broke a record. He's now the youngest ever England scorer on debut. I think that's how it works. I think that's the correct wording. Yeah, the youngest player to score on debut for England. Yes, that's it. That's it. Right. So you must be very proud because you love the Lewis-Skelly, don't you, Jan?
I do. And I was pleased to see that, true to form, when he scored the goal, he slipped on his arse, so, which I would have expected him to do. It was a good goal. Good finish, though, wasn't it?
It was a lovely finish.
Joking aside, and the through ball from Jude Bellingham was a work of art. Yes, yeah. Definite chef's kiss. We were saying last week that it's good that he's been brought in. Age, I don't think, should be a factor. If you're good enough, you're good enough. And he certainly is, even though he's a massive cheat.
Yeah, you're so cruel. So cruel. But, Terry, he may not be the best 17-year-old in the world right now, mightn't he? Because probably Scotland thought they may have done enough to stay in the top flight of the Nations League, but they were wrong, weren't they? Because Greece battered them at home, didn't they? And Scotland, this isn't throwing shade on you, Scottish fans, because as England fans, we know the feeling of losing against Greece at home. It only happened to us in October, as recently as that. But Greece have a new superstar, don't they?
They do, and I can't remember his bloody name, Graham.
Really? I mean, the name Konstantinos Karetsis doesn't actually just trip off the tongue, does it?
It does not trip off the tongue, Konstantinos Karetsis. Yeah, he plays for Genk, is that right, or is it Ghent?
Genk, with a K.
Genk, yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, he's born in Belgium, but to Greek parents, and very much his heart is of Greece rather than Belgium. Pat Nevin was, any of our listeners were listening to the Radio 5 Live coverage of yesterday afternoon, Pat Nevin was gushing and felt that there was something of a young Kevin De Bruyne about him, which is, I'd say, high praise indeed. There's quite a lot of interest in him. And I think that they've done very well to get him into the side. And yeah, he was off the mark yesterday and made a decisive contribution, scored a goal. Played a few minutes in the previous game, in the first leg as well, and was very impressive. So possibly a star was born on Sunday evening, and we will know the name of that guy. I hope that Greece make it to the World Cup, because apparently this Greece team, well, the one that we saw against England was pretty functional, but also very, very, very quick, good in transition, and really, really caught us with our pants down. And I think that that's nice. It's much nicer than the usual brand of Greek football that's never really recovered from the Otto Rehhagel days when they won in 2004. And now seem to have had something of a rebrand. So that's quite happy news. And yeah, a superstar to lead them as well.
Just going back to Scotland for a second, they are in the same group as Greece for World Cup qualifying, in there with Denmark and Belarus. So yeah, interesting to see if they can get out of that and avoid the playoff position. Those 14 groups, top goes through automatically, second goes into the playoffs, the big playoffs. Well, let's go back to the England game for now. I mean, I don't know if there really is that much we can actually say about it, really. Yes, we beat Albania 2-0 at home. And just like in the days of Gareth Southgate, it was functional. Functional. And I don't think we could have really expected anything else, could we, Jan?
Not really. I think England, even in kind of second gear, you would expect them to beat Albania. Albania were a tough test for Tuchel's first game, and I don't mean to be too disparaging about them, but you would imagine the gulf between the two nations being too great for it not to come out with England on top. I think it would be very surprising if Tuchel had his first game in charge started with a defeat to Albania. As we said, the press will eventually get to him and will hound him out, but it's lucky for him it didn't happen on day one.
Terry, you weren't expecting anything too dramatic on his first game, were you?
Well, I think he threw us a bit of a curveball in his opening press conference when he was talking about, you know, introducing the pressing game, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And beginning to play more like a Premier League side. But the reality, in hindsight, that was probably never likely to happen for this break because, again, it takes time and preparation. And also, they'll be playing two teams who are going to be playing with a very, very low block. And so it's not really going to be a good opportunity to try out anything new. I think that the thing to do is just to do what Gareth has done, and that is, you know, to control the game in its functional way and wait for the opportunity to come along. And that's what happened on Friday. And fingers crossed, that's what will happen this evening, against the mighty Latveria. Sorry, Latvia.
yes, doom awaits. We never were going to be able to tell anything about Thomas Tuchel's England side. I think we could go through the whole of this qualification campaign really without knowing much about Thomas Tuchel's approach to it, because let's face it, they are all very, very winnable games. I think even the away game in Serbia should be a game that we should be going in with expectations of getting a result in. That's just the level of expectation that Gareth Southgate has left us with, and apparently he was terrible. But that's what we have now.
It breaks my heart to say this, but I thought Dan Byrne looked really, really good at both ends of the pitch. Big, strong fella, and he was dominating in the air. So credit where it's due. He might be a dirty mag, but he's a fine, fine player. And yeah, well done him. He did really well. There was some hints as to the change that Tuchel's brought along. I think it was Joe Bellingham's older brother was talking after the match saying that we had more of an idea of how we wanted to play. So I wasn't sure whether I read into that too much, whether he was talking about maybe that wasn't the case with the previous regime. I don't know, but that just seemed to leap out at me. So maybe there is more to come with that. Maybe it is going to be a bit more purposeful than it was in Southgate.
Of course, Harry Kane scored his goal as well. His 70th goal for England, and it wasn't even a penalty. which was amazing. Thus, really, really annoying all those people who want to see him out because, yeah, he plays for in a Farmers League. Terry, I suppose some people just want him out because he doesn't play in the Premier League anymore, or they're just bored of him scoring for England and they want someone else up there. But at the moment, I mean, he still is first choice of centre forward, isn't he, for England?
Definitely. I mean, he keeps scoring goals. He is the captain. He keeps scoring goals. He's doing well for his club as well. He keeps scoring goals. I realise I've said he keeps scoring goals three times, but I do feel for a striker that this is an important metric that needs to be borne in mind. And it's probably worth saying three times, maybe a fourth even. He does keep scoring goals. There's a coalition of people who don't like Harry Kane. Some of those are because his game is different now to how it was. As he's got older, perhaps he doesn't have that kind of a dynamism particularly, you know, when coming back and concerns about whether or not he gets involved in England's back game as much as he should do. And certainly, I think there were some valid criticisms to be had during the Euros where he didn't appear to be as mobile as he was. And it does appear that he was actually carrying with him an injury and so didn't look at mobile. The other part of that coalition are people who just don't like Harry Kane, supporters of other clubs who have played against Harry Kane and just don't like him. And this is fair, and I'm for those people, but I don't think that it's enough for the England manager to drop him because, after all, he does keep scoring goals.
Yeah, aside from keep scoring goals all the time, what has Harry Kane ever done for us? I must admit, I mean, I never liked him as a Tottenham player because he had this annoying habit of scoring lots and lots of goals against Arsenal, which really, really just start to like chip away at you after a while. But no, I don't really have a problem with that front. But I did wonder if the whole thing about Tuchel introducing the idea, foreshadowing the way that England were going to play by saying, I want to play a pressing game, gives him sort of a bit more leeway to say, this is where I can ease Harry Kane out of the role of England captain and leader, because I don't think he's got pressing in his game anymore. Would that be right?
No. If pressing is going to be a big part of Tuchel's England, which he says it is, then I suppose there's going to be an expectation that he takes some of the burden. But as Terry said, while he keeps scoring lots of goals, you can't lead him. I mean, who would you put in there that you would expect to have the same output as Harry Kane has? There's some fine strikers that can play for England, don't get me wrong, but he seems to be the best of them. So I don't even think there's a question. You know, he's doing it at a very high level with a club that's still in the Champions League, and he does it every time he puts on an England shirt. You know, he's a natural first choice. I am not at home to any criticism about Harry Kane being in an England shirt.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. The questions really are, you know, what happens if Harry Kane gets injured or suspended and can't play, and who fills in for him and who scores those goals? Do England find the goals from elsewhere on the pitch, or would they be looking to, I don't know, Ollie Watkins, for example, to sort of step in and really be that prolific? There is always that issue that nothing grows under the heavy roller. And Harry Kane has been in that position for so long now that it is difficult to imagine, you know, what would happen if he needed to be replaced rather suddenly. But with all of that aside, and in view of the fact that he keeps scoring goals, I feel that what we do about Harry Kane is some post-26 problem and not a now problem.
Yeah, we're not going to be in a situation like Portugal are in, rolling out Harry Kane just to score penalties for us. He's not that kind of player, is he? He's not like Ronaldo is for Portugal, is he? If he wasn't on top of his game, he wouldn't be there. But he still is. And let's face it, he is still doing it for Bayern as well. And yeah, Jan's right. I mean, who else have we got? Ollie Watkins, yeah. Ivan Toney doesn't seem to be in the equation now because he's not playing in the Premier League anymore. And there was talk about maybe Tammy Abrahams was when he was on fire, but now that's died down a bit more now. And so then you start looking and see, well, is there more younger players that we should be focusing on? Yeah, there are players out there, but could you really guarantee they're going to be up there scoring goals like Harry Kane is? But I suppose succession management is something that has to be in Tuchel's mind. Maybe it doesn't, because he's only there to the end of 26 and then he's out of it. So then it's the next sucker's problem. Is that a good way to look at things or not? Maybe that's one of the problems of having him here for just a short period of time, because it is 26 or bust, I suppose, isn't it? What do you think, Jan?
When you said that about 26, it reminded me that Thomas Tuchel doesn't tend to hang around that long in his roles, and it tends to be for reasons that he can be a difficult man to get on with. That may not be the case with England. You know, he may well find a place that he wants to stay. I mean, if I was him, I'd just be, look, I just need to get to the World Cup and I need to give it the best shot we can and hopefully win it. And after that, then we'll see what happens after that. You know, it would be great if he, you know, he was inspired to kind of create a legacy. But the reality is that it's a result sport, isn't it? You know, if you're not bringing home the bacon, then you're gone. So why wouldn't he stick with something that he knows works? Harry Kane scores a lot of goals. I don't know if anyone's seen the stats, but he scores a lot of goals. Why wouldn't he keep him in?
I think Tuchel is the beneficiary of the legacy rather than creating a legacy. Beyond the fact that if he wins the World Cup, that will in itself be its own legacy. But his legacy that he's benefited from was started in 2010 when, you know, England went out of the World Cup in the most moribund fashion imaginable. And it was finally properly acknowledged. They said, look, this isn't like 2008 when we said we were rubbish, then we didn't really do much about it apart from make a high profile appointment. We really are rubbish and we need to have a complete rethink and we basically need to rip off the Spanish and rebuild our program. And that's what has happened. And that's why England have the players that they have now and a succession of coaches, not just first team coaches, but under 21 coaches and other coaches and performance development people have developed this England side to a point where it is now truly competitive. And Thomas Tuchel is the beneficiary of that. His job now is to spend the next year or so making that happen. That is completely why he is here, is to win the World Cup and then ideally leave. Then there will probably need to be some kind of transition and things might change. And I think that's when you start thinking about long-time leaders like Harry Kane. The idea of changing him out now is ludicrous, unless he breaks his leg or he stops scoring goals, which is unlikely because he does score goals.
He does.
Unless they made a radical change of the penalty law, then yeah. I mean, that's the only thing that can stop him at the moment, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is the only thing that can stop him. The guy can kick a ball. Sorry.
He's really good at scoring goals, especially from 12 yards with only the keeper to beat. He's really good at that.
He's very good at that.
But he scores other goals too.
Yeah, as we saw the other night when he scored the second goal against Albania.
You can be absolutely right about all the criticisms of Harry Kane. If you wanted to sit down and criticise and make a list of all the things that were wrong about Harry Kane, I am not going to argue with every single one of them. But he still scores goals.
Yeah, but as well, it's England as well. So if Robert Lewandowski was English.
Oh, God, can you imagine? Drop him, he's rubbish. He's 49, get rid of him. He's like, but he... No, I'm not going to say anymore.
Yeah, it's true though, isn't it?
I mean, Lewandowski is worshipped in Poland, and rightly so, because he's a proper generational talent in, yeah, in German football. Curiously, despite Portugal's abundance of talented players, Ronaldo is revered almost like a deity.
Yeah.
I find that odd, but it is what it is, and so I'm not here to tell Portuguese people that they're odd. I just find it odd. We don't really have anyone like, we've never really had anyone like that. We don't go in for deifying our players, our current players, possibly because we're so club focused. I don't know. Or we're just too English and cynical. Historically, yeah. We might look back on past players, Bobby Moore, for example, Paul Gascoigne. And I don't just mean restricting it to English players, Georgie Best. Even those players, you know, there isn't that necessarily that universal acclaim. That we don't have. It's kind of the idea of dropping Harry Kane is unthinkable because he scores goals. It's not because he's some kind of elevated figure in the game. We don't tend to go in for that sort of thing. And I don't know whether that's a cultural thing or whether or not it's because we produce loads of good players or what it is. I don't know. I find it interesting.
I was in Portugal quite recently. I was in Lisbon. And I don't know if you noticed this, Jan, where you were, but yeah, Ronaldo is still everywhere. Everything that is associated with football has Ronaldo's face nearby. Sporting even brought out a kit this year with yeah, you saw that too, with a Ronaldo kit. Yeah. He's not played for them for 22 years. And yet, I was walking through the airport and there was like this waxwork of Ronaldo in full Sporting kit. That's the level he has out there. And even like in his, what, third season now in Saudi Arabia, he still has that presence. Even though they've got some of the best players in the world playing for them. We spoke about this, didn't we? About how the Portuguese players seem to play within themselves when he's on the pitch with them. And it was proven in the Euros about how he was dragging them back. But this is certainly not the criticism you can level at Kane, is there? Yes, he was slightly immobile during the Euros, but was carrying an injury. But then again, so was Bellingham. And it just didn't seem that we had the options there, or Southgate was reluctant to exercise the options that he had there. And I think that was perhaps where some criticism was born, and maybe that criticism has lingered because people like their opinions, and when they come up with them, they don't want to get rid of them, do they? If they come up with a nice, sweet opinion, like, ooh, Harry Kane's a bit rubbish, then maybe they want to hold on to that for a bit, you know, especially if it suits their own personal worldview.
One of the, I mean, I think I've said it in the past myself that it would be good if we were able to renew some in some way, and that Kane was to make way for another huge talent. But while he continues to score loads of goals, it's hard to do that. But I think that the difference with Kane when you compare it to the Ronaldo situation is that if Harry Kane suddenly stopped scoring goals, he would just get dropped.
Mm.
He is droppable.
Yeah.
I mean, Harry Kane is a world-class player. There's no doubt about that. But Ronaldo is probably one of the greatest players who ever lived. And I think that's the difference then. That's why he's so revered in Portuguese culture, and he will be for as long as he lives. Whereas Kane is an incredibly gifted athlete and does his job really, really well. So he deserves to be still doing it. And the fact he's kept himself as fit as he has into the depth of his career, you know, just shows that not just the talent, but the determination and the desire to be at the top. And that takes a lot. That takes a mindset. And he's a great package. He really is.
Yeah, well, he scored more than twice as many goals for England than Alan Shearer. That's quite a staggering statistic, isn't it? It's 70 goals. Terry, you and I can remember when Bobby Charlton held the record. Well, nearly everyone can, because it was only Wayne Rooney who broke it. But we remember Gary Lineker desperately trying to beat Bobby Charlton's record of 48 goals. And no, 49 goals, that was the record, wasn't it? Lineker got to 48, didn't he? It now seems really quite quaint now, doesn't it, when he's looking at it now that Kane has got 70 goals. And yes, all right, haters, yes, a lot of them have been from 12 yards, but he's scored 70 goals.
Just thinking about Alan Shearer just quickly, yes, he had a couple of very bad injuries which did interfere with his England career, but he also played in a very bad England team. So I think it's possible that Shearer, a fit Shearer, in an England team, anything approaching what we currently have, and I think you see a better return. More like what Rooney did, of course, who breezed through them. He just cut through them, didn't he? But I think it's a measure of just how much England have improved in recent years, and how for many years England were terrible. I mean, it's so hard to convey to the many younger people who listen to this podcast. But England for much of the 70s, 80s, and 90s were terrible. If they were good, they were unwatchable, but they were mostly bad. And there was not a great deal of enthusiasm for the English national team. And now, I mean, like, it's a golden era. So it's all obviously massively relevant. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily want to put too many plaudits to Harry Kane, because after all, he is a Bayern player. And he spends an awful lot of time falling over and winning penalties. So there is plenty to dislike about him, I think, from an opposition's fan point of view. But yeah, I think in this close to the World Cup and with a team as settled as it is, yeah, I think it's Kane or bust, really.
Yeah, here's a fun stat for you. He has scored as many goals for England as Alan Shearer and Michael Owen combined. There you go. How's that? That's a nice stat that you can take to the stat bank. And another thing, Alan Shearer liked to goal from 12 yards as well.
Well, yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, Alan, in many ways, they have similar characteristics as players, as strikers. To be fair, they don't stand for any nonsense, and they gave back what they took, particularly Shearer.
Yeah.
I think the thing about Kane is that he knows the dark arts, and he knows how to win a foul. And there's nothing more infuriating than watching your team conceding a foul to Harry Kane, because you know it's bought. You know he's earned it, and he's wangled it. He's actually fouled your player, but he's done it in such a way that your player has fouled them, and it's really annoying. But it is, you know, it's why he's such a really good player and scores lots of goals.
Listeners might be thinking, "Oh, here they go!" Like every other podcast, just talking about strikers all the time. Strikers, strikers, strikers. Always talking about strikers because they get the goals. They're the marquee players, aren't they? Why don't they ever talk about fullbacks like this, eh? Why don't they ever talk about fullbacks? Well, let's talk about a fullback, shall we? Because Trent Alexander-Arnold, apparently, and I've got to hold up my little bunny ear fingers at the moment and say it's been confirmed on Monday afternoon, on the 24th of March, that he has signed for Real Madrid. This is a transfer rumour confirmed rather than an actual, real, honest-to-God. Look, even Sky Sports News are saying on a yellow ticker as confirmed. Done deal. No, it's not that yet. But it is, if you put the words confirmed and Trent Alexander-Arnold in, you'll get this very, very strong rumour that he signed for Real Madrid. Now, of course, we've been saying this since last year, haven't we? That he was going to go to Real Madrid. And Terry, you said on the Christmas podcast that you were expecting him to sign a pre-contract before the end of the season. And you were there. You are ITK for us.
I'm definitely ITK. I didn't guess at all. I know that was all based 100% on pure insight. Thank you very much, Pedro, for providing me with that particular piece of insight. Pedro is not his real name. I'm using an alias to protect relationships.
We understand perfectly. Apparently £12.5 million a year he'll be earning there. So a contract worth £62.5 million, which sounds like a snip, because if you're going to buy him on the open market, if he wasn't just a player that wasn't out of contract in the summer, then that would be an absolute steal, wouldn't it, Jan?
It would. He's a world-class player and he would be worth considerably more than that. I wonder as well if he's getting a huge signing on bonus as well, which I'd imagine that Madrid would be happy to pay, considering they're not buying him on the open market, as you said. You know, he's one of the best fullbacks in the world. So Madrid will, if it is indeed confirmed, Madrid will see that as a bit of a steal, I would think. And it'll be great to see him in that side as well, with not alongside Bellingham, obviously, but in the same side as Bellingham. You know, he's achieved so much. He's obviously won the Champions League. He's about to win he's already won the Premier League as well, hasn't he? But he's about to win it again. Or is he? Yeah, yes. I suppose you could. Yes, he's definitely going to win.
Yeah, he really is.
I suppose you could say that he's achieved everything that he could possibly achieve in England, so maybe it's time for a new challenge.
Yeah, whether or not he's invited to the party at the end of the season is another thing. If he's leaving, does he get to do a lap of honour at the end while they're lifting up the trophy? Do you think this is the first domino? Do we think now that one's gone, then the other two are going to sign pre-contract deals imminently as well? Is there going to be too much pressure now on Liverpool to not make it public or to land huge contracts on these other guys? And maybe they will now that the Trent deal frees up a bit more player budget.
I think it potentially could be the first domino, Graham. I think that with Van Dijk and with Mo Salah, if they were going to wrap up those deals, they would have done it already. And to hold out to, there's only a few games left in the season, really, isn't there?
Yeah.
To leave it this late for players of that importance to your team, it's either a miss or they just know that they're going to go and they're quite happy to let them go because there's some kind of limit on age. I think you might be a very different Liverpool side that start next season.
Mm. So, Terry, this very short domino rally, has it started?
Yeah, it is possible, yeah, to be fair. I mean, I think that it is significant that Mohamed Salah is not perhaps enjoying the best of form right now. It's not good timing if he is looking for an extension on the contract. I think that they would like to keep him. But of course, he wants, it's all about contract length at this time in a player's career. What's the contract length? And Liverpool's idea of how long it would be is going to be very different. And I think that there is, and I think we've discussed it before, there is the pull of the Saudi Pro League, which is a very lucrative league. And it means that Mohamed Salah will be able to go home back to Egypt and spend a lot of time back at home. And that may well be something that would attract him. That said, he could probably still say another season and then still go to Saudi. But yeah, the contract is up this season and not the following season. So we'll have to wait and see. But I don't think, no one should be surprised. I would be surprised if Virgil van Dijk goes. I feel that as captain and as a linchpin centre half, I'm not detecting any massive drop off in form or ability. Again, age is the issue. And I suppose length of contract is also the issue as well. But for me, that feels like the one that is, as a non-Liverpool fan, that's the least acceptable one. That is the one of the three. If you had to keep one, then I would say that you should keep Virgil van Dijk. Trent's a magnificent footballer, but there's always been perhaps a sense as a fullback, and maybe it's a fullback thing, that he isn't perhaps as integral as others, which is unfair, but it's perhaps that's there. Mohamed Salah, again, as I discussed, for me, you know, Virgil van Dijk is very much the captain, leader, legend in this scenario. And I think that it would be premature to let him go. You guys might have different views. But yeah, it's money that talks, of course.
Yeah, I think actually, if you consider the position they're in, I think if Liverpool do manage to keep one of those players, and it's Virgil van Dijk, I think they can perhaps feel that they've got away with it pretty well. What do you think, Jan? Do you think that they can spin it to make it look as if they've come out on top of that, if they can retain Virgil van Dijk and the other two go?
You've got to look at it as a win if you've managed to retain someone like Van Dijk. But I think with Salah, I have a slightly different opinion to Terry's on Salah. He's scored a lot of goals this season and he is always a threat. You may well be right. Maybe he could have achieved more. But I think that him going, I think that's going to be difficult for them to justify to their fans, given that they could just throw money at him and they've got it and he would stay. Well, I don't mean that's all he's motivated by, but, you know, it's got to grease the wheels a little bit, hasn't it? So they should have had that wrapped up by now if they had any intention to keep him. But Trent going as well, if they get to the end of the season and they've kept Van Dijk, but they've lost Trent and they've lost Salah, that's going to take some Alistair Campbell levels of spin to make that look good, isn't it?
With Trent, I think that there perhaps is a feeling that Trent wants to move on and do something else. So that it's not so much that I can't agree terms with Liverpool. It's more of a, I want to go and play for Real Madrid. And Real Madrid probably said, look, Danny Carvajal is 33. He's currently injured. We need a new Danny Carvajal. And that's you. That's a fantastic opportunity. And we're going to pay you 62 million quid and you're going to get to live in Madrid. So there's difficult to see the downsides to that arrangement. It's got to be said. I think that they can just, that's fine. You sort of like, this feels like a natural part of the ways, but I agree. You are right, Jan. There's the Mo Salah and Virgil van Dijk's departure would feel premature. Add the spanner into the works, of course, that Nunez has not worked out. And I reckon Nunez is gone in the summer. And so, you know, they'll be down two strikers at this. I know technically that he is a winger, you know, Salah, but they'll be down two goal scorers. And I know technically Darwin Nunez doesn't really score goals. And that striker that doesn't score goals.
They'll be down two players.
two people who technically score goals. One of them is a midfielder that scores goals. The other one's a striker that scores some goals. They've certainly got some recruitment issues coming up over the summer. And I think it would be wise for them to keep Salah if at all possible, if nothing else, just to manage that transition.
Just to create a nice little piece of symmetry in our conversation, before we started recording, I did see on the BBC, actually, saying that according to a Spanish outlet, that Harry Kane was, it had been confirmed. that he is going to activate some kind of release clause and move to Liverpool at the age of 31. Now, how are you going to work that when you've just let Salah go, who's roughly the same age?
Yeah.
I can't see that.
I cannot see that either. At all.
They hate him now. They can't stand him. They hate his guts.
When did this happen?
I don't know. But they just do.
Well, we'll see him score another goal tonight, I'm sure, because, yeah, he just does. He scores lots of goals. He's like Mo Salah, as far as that's concerned. Scores loads of goals.
But not Darwin Nunez.
No, we wouldn't be having this conversation about Darwin Nunez, would we? I'll be interested to see where he ends up.
I think we need to do a podcast just on Darwin Nunez about him not scoring loads of goals.
He'll go to Betis.
Betis, yeah, and I think
that's... And he'll score loads of goals.
Or not.
Who is that's gone to Betis? Didn't Anthony go to Betis?
Yes,
and he's doing really well.
He's scoring lots of goals.
And he didn't score lots of goals in Manchester, did he? He was quite the opposite.
Well, it's FA Cup this weekend. Well, actually for us, it's FA Vars this weekend because Whiteleaf, our non-league club, AFC Whiteleaf, are in the semi-finals. We play Andover New Street. We've got the first leg coming up this weekend, second leg next weekend. So next week pod, maybe us being really jubilant. It may be maybe us being a bit down or us being a bit tense because it's all in the balance and away leg to go. But obviously on the telly for you guys who won't be going to Church Road, and really if you want to come to Church Road, feel free, but tickets are selling out very, very quickly. I think 1,200 have already been sold as the one I checked earlier. So, yeah, should be a real bumper gate down there at the bottom of my road on Saturday. But what will we be watching on telly this weekend, I wonder? Well, as I said, it's FA Cup. So Terry, Palace at Craven Cottage on Saturday lunchtime. Do you think that plays into your hands? Or do you think that adds a bit more home advantage there?
That what game is impossible to call. Yeah. I mean, there's a fag paper between those two teams. And so I would say if you're looking for intriguing cup tie nonsense, then I think that that's probably one of the most intriguing games, because there's nothing between them. Both teams highly motivated to win. You know, this is the biggest game of their season, I suspect. The only bigger game will be a season. It will be the one that they play afterwards. Whoever wins. I mean, it's massive. It's massive. I know only jungle is massive, but no, I'm going to say this game is massive. Great news, the Palace have got Mateta back, or likely to have Mateta back. He's cleared to be fit, so whether or not he starts, I don't know. But he hasn't played since the last game. Palace have had a two-week break because they missed out on the League Cup final. Because of the League Cup final, they were playing one of the League Cup finalists, and they had an international break. So they're in good shape. So yeah, it's absolutely on a knife edge, that game. It should be absolutely intriguing. I'm really looking forward to sitting on the train while I travel to Whiteleaf while that game's going on.
Yeah. Well, hey, why don't it come up earlier and then you can watch it at mine?
That's not a bad idea, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, Terry's right. That one's on a knife edge. But I think all of them are. I think you'd be brave calling any of these ties. Brighton against Forest could go either way. I think even Preston Villa could go either way, don't you think?
This is what the FA Cup's all about, the fact that Preston are still there. And if they're able to do something, that would be wonderful. I quite like Villa, so I've no real desire to see them get knocked out, other than the fact it would be brilliant to see Preston in the semi-finals, it'll be.
Yeah.
By then, won't it? I think Forest have probably got a little bit more than Brighton. I think that they'll edge through. I think it's going to be a good season for those guys. But I don't know whether Bournemouth are playing Man City at the wrong time for them and maybe the right time for City. City look like the strongest team on paper in the competition, but they have not had the best season. So I would agree that maybe that one's on a bit of a knife edge as well.
Mm.
Iraola's going to mastermind a City downfall.
Yeah. This is his interview, isn't it?
Yeah, this is his interview. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
And who knows, that take may actually make it into the box set this week. But if you want to see all of the hot takes that we come up with on those games and the three others that will be in this weekend, the seven games that you should be watching from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. Subscribe to our Substack and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. Yeah, honestly, it will be. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry DeFun, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Terry channeling Brian Clough there.
He's just a fullback, young man.
Young man, you are just a fullback.
You are just a fullback, young man. Don't get ahead of yourself.
So I'm going to do the rest of the show as Brian Clough, young man.
I think that that's a very good idea, young man.
Yes, I do. I think that's an excellent idea, young man.
No, we're not finished. Don't give us your how you finished look, because we are not finished. Giving us your are you finished look only actually encourages us further. Do you see what I mean, young man? I bet Graham's Brian Clough is epic.
Yes.
He's not going to give it to us, though, as a matter of principle.
I would not give you my Brian Clough for nothing.
Yes!
Yeah, fine, whatever.
You can take all your takes, all your pots and pans, and chuck them in the bin.
All your opinions.